Hello, this is Clemens Heuch. I'm with Nokia. I'm VP and Head of Global Disputes and Litigation. And you're listening to IP Fridays.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of IP Fridays. Our names are Ken Suzanne and Rolf Clayson, and this is the podcast dedicated to intellectual property. It does not matter where you are from, in-house or private practice, novice or expert. We will help you stay up to date with current topics in the fields of trademarks, patents, design and copyright, discover useful tools, and much more.
My co-host Ken Suzanne and I are welcoming you to episode 150 of IP Fridays. Today's interview guest is Clemens Heusch of Nokia, and we talk about the patent battle with Oppo and litigation strategy and the UPC and all different kinds of very interesting topics. But before we jump into the interview, I have news for you. The European Patent Office has published the recent filing numbers, and filings are up from 193,000 to 199,000, nearly 3%. And the strongest filing entity is Huawei in China, and then are following Samsung and LG from Korea, and Qualcomm and Ericsson on place number 5. Most filings come from the US with 24%, then follows Germany with over 12%, and then Japan. Most patents have been filed in the digital communication sector, followed by medical technology and computer technology. Also, to let you know, the Canadian Intellectual Property Office has published their current version of the Manual of Patent Office Practice, MOPOP. So this is something to note for people who are active patenting in Canada. And also important to note is that the European Parliament has voted 454 to 83 votes in favor of the EU Commission's proposal for a new regulation for standard essential patents. And it's important to know in this episode that this vote comes just a day or 2 days after recording the interview with Clemens Heusch. We are referring to this upcoming vote, so the vote is already there. So let's jump into the interview with Clemens Heusch. Today's interview guest is Clemens Heusch. If you don't know who Clemens is, he is the Vice President and Head of Global Litigation and Disputes at Nokia. Thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Nokia and Oppo have reached a cross-license agreement in January, and you have ended what was probably the biggest patent dispute of the last 3 years, with many proceedings before courts and patent offices worldwide. What was this all about, and can you summarize the approximate timeline and some facts for our listeners?
Yes. So first of all, we are very happy that Nokia and Oppo could come to an agreement. The agreement is confidential, so I can, of course, not give you any details of the agreement. But I can mention that just 2 weeks later, we also settled with Vivo, which was somehow parallel, and we also concluded new cross-licenses agreements. So this means Nokia Technologies has concluded 4 big hand license agreements within 1 month, basically, which is fantastic success. Wow. of my licensing colleagues. Yeah, when it comes to Oppo, indeed, it was a relatively long dispute, longer than most of the others we have seen so far. And this is because both sides had their positions and their arguments. And like always in these disputes, in these litigation projects, every side tries to get support for their argument through the litigation. And then each one has to know for himself when you have enough facts, when it's a good point of time to settle. And so therefore here it took longer than usual, but it was a very interesting litigation project where we have learned a lot. We have litigated in 10 jurisdictions. I think we had altogether more than 60 different patents in disputes, offensive litigation, defensive litigation. So it was a big project, and we had strong players on both sides, which made it somehow exciting. And of course, as a litigator, you have always two hearts in your body. On the one hand, you are happy for the company to find a good solution. On the other side, as a litigator, there were so many cases which were not yet decided where I would have been excited to see the outcome, but that's part of the game that you have at one point of time. There must be a kind of commercial solution. And so therefore, I have not seen all the decisions I would have liked to see.
Do you know how long the dispute lasted?
That is public knowledge. So that is something I can disclose here. It started all in July. I need to calculate now, 2021. And it ended in January 2024. So it was a bit more than 2.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long time to find time to settle. Can you let our listeners know how you settled the conflict and how much does Oppo have to pay and what other benefits did Nokia have as a result?
Yeah, you will understand that I cannot say more than what has been in Nokia's press release. But what I can state is that we concluded a multi-year cross-license agreement. So this means we get access to Oppo's SEPs, they got access to our SEPs. And of course, there's also a financial component, but I cannot disclose the numbers, unfortunately.
And one thing that is always interesting for both for the in-house people who are listening to this, but also for the practitioners in law firms, I was just curious how much money this battle has cost Nokia.
Yeah, unfortunately, also here I cannot give a precise number, but nobody will be surprised to hear that this is, of course, a big investment. We have litigated, as I said, in 10 jurisdictions. The most expensive jurisdiction, the US, was not included in this dispute. So this means in that regard, it was maybe not the most expensive dispute we ever had. But of course, if you litigate in 10 jurisdictions over 2.5 years with so many patents involved, it cost a lot of money for both sides, and that's, of course, one of the reasons why at one point of time it is always reasonable to come to the table and to conclude the agreement.
Right, and probably you also had some efficiency because you had many different disputes in parallel with also other litigants. What did you learn from this battle, and what would be the three most important lessons learned that could be useful to know for our listeners?
Well, I think three things which I would like to emphasize is, first of all, I think everybody in this market is smart and has great people and knows what they are doing. So never, ever take anything easy, but take it very serious. That might be one message. The second message is what we have seen here, that, let's say, many things are needed to come to an agreement. You, of course, need to have a strong litigation case, but I think also so many other people at Nokia did a great work in our licensing team, in our technical team. So it takes really a team effort to come to the result. Third point is that we have here now been litigating with a Chinese company. Chinese come from a different cultural, economical background, so they have a different approach to things. And you cannot treat everybody the same. You have to speak to people differently depending on what is their background. And Chinese are, in my point of view, let's say, challenging counterparts, which gave us a lot of challenges and made our life not easy. But I think our negotiation team managed to find the right contacts to establish some trust with them so that we could come to an agreement.
Yeah, that's important to establish trust when you want to find a solution that would fit both parties, right? That's a very important lesson. Now I would like to touch on a completely other topic, or not so completely different, but a little bit different. The EU now wants to establish an entity at the EU IPO, so the European Union Intellectual Property Office, deciding license rates for standard essential patents. And the rapporteur, Marion Waldsmann, in this project said that she thinks that 85% of standard essential patents are not essential, and this new project is aimed to help small and medium-sized businesses. So how can the EU, the European Union, already know that 85% of SEPs are not standard essential? But maybe before answering these questions, can you briefly summarize what the EU is planning here and why the EU IPO is tasked with patent-related projects when the EU IPO has absolutely no experience in dealing with patents so far?
That is a very good question. So I think we have to go one step back. So the European Union started this project of looking into the standard essential patents and the licensing of SEPs already some years ago. They spoke to many stakeholders. I think they got a little bit the wrong impression because they had the starting point that there are big issues with licensing SEPs. Our experience actually is more the contrary. We have concluded more than 200 SEP license agreements, and only a handful of those single-digit numbers were the result of litigation. So this means that far more than 90% are negotiated amicably, and so therefore I would say there is not a huge problem here. The second point is, let's say those who complain loudest are not always right, but of course those who have an issue or who see an opportunity make the most noise. And here there were obviously, especially on the implementer side, some companies who want to optimize their costs, and you thought they could maybe end up in cheaper licenses by using the regulator by making licensing more complicated, more burdensome for the licensor side, so that they end up maybe with cheaper licenses. That's at least my take of this. And then when it comes to the SMEs, I have sometimes a little bit the impression that you always use SMEs if you want to emphasize your case. Whether the SMEs are really so affected or not, I don't know. I have seen very, very rarely big patent holders suing SMEs, usually just because they don't have a business case. You would not invest $1 million into litigation to come out with a license agreement which brings you $20,000 per year or something like this. So, as I said, I've rarely seen SMEs being defending in SEP litigation, so I'm not sure whether this is really the issue. We know that, let's say, some very big companies have been pushing a lot for this draft regulation, who probably can afford or who are paying reasonable royalties and who can afford that, but who, of course, would like to save some money if that's possible. But that seems to me a little bit more driving this entire thing here. And then why the EU IPO? Many people say the most obvious authority to handle this, if you need such an authority at all, but then would probably be the EPO. But the problem is that the EPO is not an authority of the European Union, but it's an international authority. So the European Union was obviously looking for an EU authority, and so therefore they chose the EU IPO, which so far has mainly been dealt with trademarks, and they have absolutely no expertise with patents. The Commission believes that's no issue to get this expertise, to hire the relevant people. I think I have some overview of the market. I don't know where they want to get all these people. And there are not so many SAP experts, and I'm also not sure that they are all willing to take these kind of roles. So this seems to me quite challenging. And I hope really that there will be quite a lot of significant amendments to the draft regulation if it ever passes before, just to avoid the worst.
Right. So what is your personal opinion of this new project of the EU? And you already pointed out that maybe SMEs are not really behind this project. So who do you think is really behind this project?
Yeah, I indicated this seems to be that there are some big patent users who are behind this. So who are the net payers? And whenever you have costs and you have some internal controllings, you think, where can we save costs? And then you see, okay, we pay a lot for licenses, or maybe not a lot, but at least a certain amount, which some controllers consider a lot. And then you think, how can we optimize this? Yeah, then you try to maybe negotiate your license figures down, and if you cannot negotiate it down, then you maybe try to involve the regulator and tell the regulator, here's a huge issue, we use third-party technology and need to pay for that, how can you help us? And then, all right. Yeah, and then you say it also helps the SMEs, which kind of gives you a lot of credits from the regulators, and then suddenly we have a draft regulation on the table.
Right. So who do you think is that? Is that mostly the automotive industry, or are there other industries that are also...
It seems to us that the automotive industry was quite involved here, not only car makers, but also their suppliers. But I think also other implementers from the consumer industry and also their associations have been quite active here.
So what is your personal opinion about this project? I know that you can't really give an opinion as Nokia, but what do you personally think about this approach?
I think, let's say, it creates a lot of costs. If you introduce all these new registers, all these essentiality checks, and then these mandatory mediations and many, many other things, this all costs a lot of money. And at the end of the day, this money has to come from somewhere. And what I hear from the Commission and also from the Parliament is that the licensing revenues of the SAP owners shall not drop. On the other side, the licensing costs for the users shall not increase, and then there are a lot of costs. So somehow this for me just does not work. So I think it's a lot of costs, but what is from my point of view even worse is that the access to justice will be quite significantly limited, because there is a mandatory mediation which will take at least 9 months, and during this mediation it is not allowed to file litigation, to file cases for patent infringement. And I think access to justice is one of the fundamental principles of democracy and also of the Fundamental Rights Charter of the European Union. And you can, of course, say, well, it's not blocked the access, it's only delayed. But of course, how much delay means de facto blocking the access? I've never seen so far that, let's say, the access was so much delayed, and this especially for a life, for a right with a very limited lifetime. In theory, we learned patent has 20 years, but we know the granting procedure can take up to 10 years, sometimes even longer. Then usually you would not litigate it during the opposition period, and then at the end of the lifetime, you will also not litigate the patent if you cannot get decisions before the patent has expired. So this means in the end you have only a few years where you can really use the patent. And if you are then delayed by at least 9 months, then it really takes a lot of your property right. And that is why I have high doubts that this draft regulation as it stands right now is in line with the Charter of Fundamental Rights.
Okay, yes. That's an important thought, I think. In a previous interview on this podcast, IP Fridays, former USPTO director David Kapos has thought that the EU is actually solving a non-problem. And you mentioned something similar, because so few cases involving SEPs are actually go to court. And the court so far did a really good job in deciding these few cases. What do you think? But you briefly mentioned this before, but maybe you can elaborate a little more.
Yes, of course, you have SAP owners who want to get the best license fees for their IP, but you have users who want to keep their costs low. This is already kind of controlled by the case law which we have. And first of all, we have the Huawei versus ZTE case, for which the CJEU decided in 2015, which already introduced a quite good system of checks and balances. It states that the patent owner first has to make the user aware of his patents, that he both sides have to engage in negotiations, that the patent owner has to make friend offers, and only if he has really done his homework, checked all the boxes, only then he gets an injunction. So this means the threat for users is limited, and especially the threat of paying excessive royalties. Of course, there is always some uncertainty for the user. If he is uncertain whether his offer is good enough or not, then there might be a remaining risk. But from my experience, I have seen that courts make a lot of indications before they really injunct. And even if you get injuncted, then you can still reach out to the patent owner and try to settle this issue. He's always interested to settle this, and patent owner doesn't really want to push somebody out of the market. He wants to be fairly remunerated and receive his royalties. And as soon as the user is willing to pay that, there's absolutely no interest in enforcing any injunctions. And also then there are legal measures like enforcement protection and so on. So I really don't think that the implementer is here, let's say, in a position where he badly needs some support from the legislator.
Yeah. So you share the the idea of David Kappos that this is solving maybe a non-problem. And also, you mentioned that this is the project of the EU is also quite expensive because of the essentiality checks and having to hire all these people for something that is very well decided by the courts, right? And you mentioned the case law and the rules that are already set out. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And on top of that, we know that licensing usually takes place globally. And this means if access to EU courts, which are great courts, which have a lot of experience, which have fantastic judges, if access to these courts is blocked, we run risks that these disputes are then settled in front of other courts. I mean, I heard that you, the UK lawyers were extremely happy about this draft regulation because it might bring a lot of cases to the UK. But of course, also there are other jurisdictions around the world, in India or in the US or in Brazil or in other Asian countries. So there are other jurisdictions which might then decide the cases. And I'm not sure whether it's really good that they are then decided abroad rather than here at our very good European courts.
How do you think this will turn out? How will this be decided? And what will be the situation in 5 years from now, in your opinion?
Well, difficult to guess. I would be happy if I knew how the situation is in 1 year. No, but seriously, later this week, the draft regulation comes to vote in the parliament. Let's see what comes out there. We know that there has been also now quite controversial discussions with many members of the parliament raising very serious concerns, whether they are enough to send it back to the to the committees or to the commission. I don't know. I don't have the full picture here, but we will know in a couple of days. But that's, of course, only the first step. Then it needs to go to the council. And also here, it seems to me at this point of time, quite unpredictable when and especially how they will decide. We hear that from the member states, there are hundreds of questions coming to the European Commission. The views are quite diverse. So I think it still is absolutely open whether or when this regulation will ever come into force. And if so, in which shape? And so we just have to wait. And so this makes it so difficult to foresee what happens in the next 5 years. I personally hope that we will have no regulation, but really trust our courts that they will handle these cases properly and manage that IP owners get fair rewards for their inventions. On the same side, that of course the product industry has enough certainty so that they can plan and that they can produce their products and market their product.
I'm interviewing the EU IPO director in about a month now, so that would be interesting to ask him questions about this project. What would you ask him as a question?
I would be most interested to hear from him where he will get all these people, all these capacities he needs in order to do the task which he might be asked to by the SEP regulation. As I said earlier, for me, it's a kind of mystery where all these people, where all these capacities shall come from.
Okay, I will ask him and let's see what he says.
Good.
So thank you so much for your time. And it was a really interesting interview from an in-house practitioner. And thank you so much for being on IP Fridays.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode. If you liked what you heard, please show us your love by visiting ipfridays.com/love and tweet a link to this show. We would be so grateful if you would do that. It would help us out to get the word out. Also, please subscribe to our podcast at ipfridays.com or on iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you have a question or want to be featured in one of the upcoming episodes, please send us your feedback at ipfridays.com/feedback. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can go to ipfridays.com/iTunes, and it will take you right to the correct page on iTunes. If you want to get mentioned on this podcast or even have comments within the next episode, please leave us your voicemail at ipfridays.com/voicemail. You have been listening to an episode of IP Fridays. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, their respective law firms. None of the content should be considered legal advice. The IP Fridays podcast should not be construed as legal advice or legal opinion on any specific facts or circumstances. The contents of this podcast are intended for general informational purposes only, and you are urged to consult your own lawyer on any specific legal questions. As always, consult a lawyer or patent or trademark attorney. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved.